Simon, welcome back.
Yes, hello, how are we?
We are good, and we are recording episode 23, which
23.
You know, 23 has the unique property of being the smallest prime number that is not a twin prime, that is a prime number that doesn't have another one within two spaces of it on the number line.
Yes, of course. That old piece of knowledge that we're all very aware of. the number 23, the other thing that comes to mind for me is Blink-182 and the lyric, "Nobody likes you when you're 23.
Was that a reference to like Michael Jordan? Because that was the only thing I could come up with 23 was Michael Jordan.
I think it's actually, the line is, "Nobody likes you when you're 23 and you still act like you're in freshman year." So it's less about the age of 23 and it's more about the delta that exists between that age and the level of maturity you would expect from an 18-year-old. Similar to the phrase, "great minds think alike," it has been modified over time, and you know, the second part has been dropped, so people just go around in the Blink world saying, "Nobody likes you when you're 23.
Yeah.
So, or, there you go. Fun facts. Well, and
you know what? You know, 23, I like 23.
And me.
Because it's also, if you sum the first nine primes up to 23, that's a perfect square, equals 100.
Oh.
And the sum of the first 23 primes is 874, which is divisible by 23, property shared by a few other numbers. Now,
Jim, where are you going?
Now, you might be asking yourself, how am I going to segue this into the topic for today's
episode? Let's see this Olympic meet.
Well, hold my beer.
Okay.
New York's iconic Times Square intersection boasts the world's largest interactive billboard. It spans the entire block that separates 45th and 46th Streets from Broadway and is about 100 meters long and, wait for it, 23 meters tall. Number just keeps showing up everywhere.
It does.
Billboards, of course, are just one form of a broader category of advertising called out of home. A format that is, as digital marketers and analysts, we don't typically consider. But when it comes to measuring billboards and other out-of-home channels, how exactly do we do that? Well, we brought on an expert at the cutting edge of out-of-home to answer this question and bring light to how out-of-home is changing in today's digital world. Ty Tinker is the head of analytics at AdQuick, a company that is modernizing the out-of-home advertising space, bringing billboards back, baby! Welcome to the show, Ty.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim, and good to see you, Simon.
Yeah, likewise. Jim, I'm going to need a few more references to 23. I don't know if that
I'm build turning up on paid off
in the height of a billboard being 23 meters tall. I was like, oh, there's going to be some numerology going on or something. But Ty, welcome to the show. We're very excited to have you. And this is an interesting area. This is one that, you know, I'll be driving down the freeway and I'll see a billboard out my window. And it'll be like, "Monday Night Football's on in 25 minutes. And in the back of my head, I'm like, 23
minutes.
Yeah. Are they targeting me? Do they know that I'm here? How are they even measuring? Do they have tune-in data? So I am incredibly interested to dive into this, especially as we just think about the modern proliferation of these novel surfaces. And we think about what is the future of out of home. And maybe that's even a great place to begin. Although for folks who've never heard of AdQuick, maybe we should hear a little bit about AdQuick and all that you do.
Yeah, there's a couple places we can start here. I think AdQuick is a good one because it is interesting. So AdQuick, you may be familiar with it. AdQuick is a ad tech platform that provides easy access to all of the billboard inventory in the world. And we call it out of home because there's more than just billboards. All sorts of different types of inventory you can access on the platform, all sorts of different stages that you can advertise on all over the world. So AdQuick's objective is to make that easy to plan on, easy to execute, and then easy to measure, which requires a pretty solid base of metadata on all of this inventory all over the world to truly measure. So that's kind of where AdQuick sits in the space. We're connected. We're an omni-channel platform in many ways and try to provide measurement across the board. There's a whole lot that AdQuick does, but the main thing there is just giving you an easy way to look through the inventory. And it's a map-based platform, so you can kind of zoom in, zoom out, see what kind of details and impressions you want to reach, where you want to advertise your brand, all sorts of interesting stuff that you can do with the platform. So that's a brief overview of what we're trying to do and kind of make accessible, which hasn't been done before. Historically, it's been a little bit challenging to set up a billboard campaign. If you think about the traditional way of booking a billboard, really you would hop into a phone book or jump online and find a phone number of some media owner, maybe an Outfront or Lamar, one of those names that you know in your head, but you don't know where it's from.
Yeah,
billboard,
little corner, the corner of the billboard that is just like, what is that?
Yeah,
what is Clear Channel?
Yeah, exactly. It you know what it is, but you don't really know where you know it from. It's the subconscious activity that's happening because of billboards. Anyways, you'd call one of these media owners and say, "Hey, I'm located in Austin, Texas. I'm in Nashville. I really want to advertise my brand on a billboard." And then within a few months, you might have a creative ready to go. And a couple months later, it'd be approved. And then after 6 months, you've got a campaign, right? And that's kind of the old way.
Time now. Yeah.
And all of this is like
same media owners.
Like printing out a vinyl. People would actually have to drive out to the billboard, climb up the ladder, install the vinyl on, like very, you know, very old school, right? Very not non-digital.
Yeah. I remember growing up in an era where they had like radio stations that have contests where you would go stand on a billboard and it would you just stand in front of the billboard for like this radio show and it'll be like, whoever stays up here the longest wins a car. Then you have people up there for like 48 hours sleep deprived.
The old Mr. Beast.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. How long can you hold on to the billboard?
Yeah,
exactly. I'm a climber. I could hang on for a while. Yeah, you can go out, and it's still cool. Yeah. I mean, it's still being done. And vinyl wraps are still very much a thing. They're huge. It's a huge part of the ad spend in the billboard space. The challenge was, and kind of where AdQuick tried to step in, is basically planning and booking that, and across media owners as well, because there's still a supply chain, still got to get it printed, still got to have some folks go up and set up the wrap on the billboard. But when you want to plan something at scale, let's say you wanted to do maybe 4,000 units across the US and you wanted it to be specific to some audience and you wanted it to be just outside of every major city in the US, and that crosses over, you know, 20 to 50 different media owners, there's no easy way to do that. In fact, it sucks. It was the worst. That's the reason for the advent of the company. Our founders were from Instacart and they tried to do a billboard campaign. That was the objective. They were like, hey, let's throw up on billboards. Everybody needs Instacart. Everybody can use Instacart. Billboards are, you know, huge, especially within city metros where folks are busy and shoppers need an easy way to, you know, get their groceries. Anyways, they wanted to do a billboard campaign and it was the worst. So bring in AdQuick. That was the idea.
Yeah. So they're like literally calling up dozens of different, what do you call those, brokers or agencies, like the Lamars and the Clear Channels and the media owners, right? And trying to set up these one-off deals with all of them. And
Well, and not all inventory, I imagine, would be created the same, and they would all have different lifespans. Like there is so much complexity in this. And I guess maybe a good place to start is to be frank. And sorry, are we just talking billboards? Is it, because you mentioned there's other types of inventory. If you gaze in a crystal ball, what other kind of inventory are we talking here?
Yeah, not just a crystal ball. Other inventory exists. So there's kind of three major categories that I would, if I were talking to a founder who wanted to start doing billboards, this is what I would talk about. There's your traditionally booked static inventory. So not digital, vinyl wraps, you can think about it that way. Okay. Those come in all shapes and sizes. And then you have your digital units that are traditionally booked. So these are 8-second slots on a big digital screen or a small digital screen, but you're guaranteed the inventory for some period of time. So over the course of 1 month, some local diner is going to have their ad rotate for 8 seconds at a time for a 30-day period, and then you get proof of performance. The third type is definitely one of these kind of sexier, more interesting sides of out of home that's quickly growing and very interesting. It's programmatic digital. This is kind of a bid system where you can access inventory, but you don't necessarily know what inventory, or you don't have a guarantee of what inventory you're going to get. You just are guaranteed a CPM, so a cost per thousand impressions, and then you're also guaranteed some kind of geo-fenced region. And you can also be guaranteed a few other things, such as audiences that you're going to reach. So that's kind of the third category. And we have dedicated resources providing access to this within our platform, and so do all the media owners.
And is it right to say that that third option is, those are all digital screens too, or are those also like non-digital screens?
Yep. They have to be. They have to be. Yeah. But they're hooked up into an SSP, so a supply side platform. So you can go scroll through existing available inventory, but you need a DSP of some sort to start a demand side platform to start bidding on this inventory. It's interesting. It's not a big portion of the out of home space in terms of dollars, but it is extremely interesting because it is very attractive to digital marketers and digital first marketers. My story, I started in marketing in out of home, which is kind of hilarious. I was doing data science and building recommender systems prior. And then I heard about this out of home measurement challenge. I said, okay, this sounds like the hardest possible thing I could start working on. Let's get our hands dirty. And so I didn't even know about really digital programmatic and bidding systems prior. I just knew, hey, I'm driving by this billboard. How do I know if it works? That was my big question.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of it's the least, at least coming from my unknown state of view, it seems to be the least deterministic form of measurement that would be applied here. And perhaps the measurement conversation here is framed up both in terms of, well, when you're talking about the inventory that's available, how is that even being, when you talked before about a guaranteed audience, right? When you're talking about the like geo-fenced spaces, obviously some of the inventory that you can get, say, on the side of a freeway, and maybe that's really predictable because you have cameras on the freeway that's like, look, we know that 1,000 cars go through here, and I don't know, what is it like? You count cars, you do surveys. How is this being measured at that point in time to determine the audience and I guess essentially the quality of the inventory that exists?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's especially tricky when it comes to digital units. So I'm going to give a little bit of insight into how the kind of supply and data works, the data supply works. There's three kind of key data sets that you need. The first data set is billboard inventory. You need a really good idea of exactly where your billboard's located, what direction it's facing. These are the realities. If you're measuring the wrong side of the billboard, you're not going to collect the right audience. Yeah. So you need the direction it's facing. You need the latitude and the longitude. And then you need a kind of a few other pieces of metadata to really know how the billboard is reaching the audience that's standing, literally standing right in front of it. The next piece that you need is audience data. Audience data comes in kind of many shapes and forms, but really it is linked to anonymized mobile device IDs that are connected to some sort of buying activity. So you have like your Amazons, you have your like Experian, you have certain audience providers that have some shared information about people. You also have census data. You have kind of demographics. Basically, anything that can help define what audiences exist within a certain geo region.
And this is for like even the traditional like the vinyl wrapped billboards too, or is this just?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
In fact, it's really interesting for those vinyl wrapped billboards because those are always on. So you kind of have 24-hour access to a specific audience that changes over the course of the day, just like the weather. You know, you have your morning commuters, you have your gym goers, you have your midday lunch people, you know, who are going out, venturing out into the real world, the out-of-home space to go do whatever activities interest them. And that kind of buying activity is somewhat available, and it's also linked to your kind of digital presence. So there's these audiences. That's a hairy space. It's really complex to start to try and pull these in. Luckily, there's some really great aggregators that kind of take care of that. So we plug into that audience data, and then we connect it to the third piece of data, which is mobile location data. Basically, any anonymized opt-in data that represents whether or not a certain device ID was within the vicinity of a billboard during an ad campaign. So think about, like, I love vinyl wraps because they're so simple compared to the digital space. The vinyl wraps are always on 24/7. And if they're lit, then they're on during the nighttime as well. So we have a pretty good idea, or at least a better idea, of who is in and around these units. Now,
this is
mobile location data.
So even with
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So I was under the assumption that we only got that sort of like location data from phones for like the more sophisticated, newer digital types of out of home. But are you saying for even the vinyl wraps, are there devices up on the billboard somewhere that's like pinging off of phones for even the old school vinyl wraps?
No, it's not quite that creepy. Luckily, you're not being tracked. There's no access to your, there's no connection to, well, maybe there is, but I haven't heard about
it. It's creepier than that. It's the cell phone companies selling out.
Yeah. Okay. So it's, cell phone. So the cell phone company is giving that data.
It's primarily opt-in through like retail weather apps. If you're sharing your location, and Apple is very blatant about this, when you get a notification on your phone, it says, would you like to share your location? And then you can manage those kind of preferences. You can opt in to share your location, and that provides access to advertisers to understand whether or not you're within a certain vicinity, shopping at a certain retail store. It's not the best. In fact, it's fairly low opt-in rates, but it's high enough to get a good understanding of what types of audiences are in and around units, right? You're not going to have, like you mentioned before, there's not this deterministic tracking. It's not even anywhere close to 100% of tracking, and that's okay. It's, for me, having a data science background, I'm not interested in deterministic tracking because that's that's not necessarily going to help the field move forward and start to explore how to reach audiences without tracking them. And we're moving towards a cookie-less world. We're putting data privacy first. This is no surprise, and it's something that's really empowering to consumers. But advertisers still struggle with the challenge of finding who their audience is. So right now is kind of the optimal time to start testing with out of home, because you're going to be, it's a one-to-many channel. You're going to be reaching hundreds of thousands, if not millions of eyeballs, and you're going to really have a good idea of which audiences responded well and which ones maybe didn't respond as well as you were expecting. So there's experiments that can be set up.
Interesting. The real world is complicated and a little bit absurd in some of these scenarios. So while you are, it sounds like we're essentially modeling, right? We're looking at a model of what the potential audience scope is, maybe like the different cohorts throughout the day. But humans change, and you mentioned weather. All of these things are influential as to whether folks will be driving by, or maybe, I don't know, there's a detour off the freeway, or there's a police chase and the freeway gets shut down for a couple. Like, are those things that you're taking into account? I guess, are you modeling the likelihood that freeways are getting shut down and that police chases are happening? And if so, like in LA, we have police chases every single day on TV here.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I do see the billboards on TV when I'm watching it. So I'm like, oh, this is now out of home, in home. This is an interesting situation. Which are you modeling that effect at all? How are you thinking about the accuracy here?
Yeah. Well, I love police chases too. And they get so many views on YouTube. We have, it's like 10,000 people will be live streaming the LAPD. Like, police, it's awesome. It's like linear TV all over again. It's wonderful, and it's great for billboards.
I'm imagining
chases and live sports is the only things you watch on TV.
I'm imagining a secondary business where I hire criminals to lead police chases past particular billboards.
There you go.
And sell inventory back to the, okay. Anyway,
give them a cut of the CPM. I like that.
I love that. Yeah, and the more interesting the chase. CPM. I remember one police chase. It was really sad the way it ended up, but it was a logging truck. It had like giant 50-foot trees on the back of it, and someone had hijacked this truck and was evading the police by whipping the wheel fast enough to where the logs fell off of the back and blocked the road. Terrible kind of ending, but incredible chase, and definitely has a lot of eyeballs. It's just up to brands to decide whether or not they're interested in being associated.
If you're a bail bondsman, that sounds like a great place to be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, hey, look around. Why are there so many attorneys on billboards? I grew up in Austin, Texas, went to school in San Antonio, Texas. It's some of the highest spenders in those two cities are attorneys because they're right there. I mean, it's proximal. It's like the time to conversion is almost immediate. You want to have, you know, the bail bonds and the certain phone numbers memorized. And so it's really relevant.
Sure.
But that's a very short timeline, right? That's a very short time to conversion. There are other strategies, some really interesting strategies, kind of with billboard advertising. Maybe as fun and experimental as guiding a police chase past your billboards. But what the parallel I think of in my head is right now, a lot of folks are using generative AI to create billboard campaigns that don't actually exist, right? Mm. So they're putting up units all over Times Square that they didn't pay for. They are putting themselves onto the Sphere. They didn't actually book the Sphere.
It's sure.
really expensive. Most brands can't afford it or don't want to justify those kinds of costs just to advertise in Vegas. So they'll make it up. And that's fine. Sure. Those are additional impressions. What we talk about when we think about the science powering the performance of a billboard campaign is going to be
And sorry, just so we have clarity on that, we're talking about faux out of home in the sense of if a brand pretends to be in Times Square, they put their image up on one of those. They have an image generator that their logo is now up there, and they take a screenshot of that, and then they put that onto Instagram and be like, look at us. And it's essentially the same creative they would have used. There we go. So for anyone watching on the on YouTube here, you can see the Measure Up billboard in Piccadilly Circus that Jim and I are in the process of negotiating with AdQuick. So
I think you did Jim a little dirty with this copy.
This is one of the challenges of the sizing and the it wasn't a dynamic responsive capture of the image. But sorry, I just wanted to make sure that folks had clarity on what that faux out of home would be in the sense of using the style of the inventory but not actually buying it. Sorry, and then you're talking about the halo effect.
Yeah. So here's what's super interesting is, okay, so you have this faux campaign, you put up a fake billboard, you put it on whatever, certain socials, and you're able to track the metrics that are associated with that. There is a halo effect of out-of-home advertising where if you think about the traditional reasons that someone would book a big brand campaign on billboards across the US, it's really like establishing that your brand is there. You're not there to mess around. You have a presence in this particular city. Your products are available or products or services are available. There's a lot of these kind of prestige effects that occur with out of home. So when folks fake it, which I love, it's super exciting and very kind of expands the bounds of creativity when it comes to out of home, gives some new ideas. When people fake it and then you measure those organic effects, those are actually really comparable to something we measure in the real billboard space when you're actually booking units, which are those halo effects. So when you place your brand in the mind's eye and have that consistent frequency that's continuing to build the prestige of the brand, you're actually a lot more likely to have a higher conversion rate on your digital channels because of the out of home. So historically, when out of home was measured or when you know you use only deterministic tracking, you're missing out on a lot of the effects, not only from lack of, like, let's say, mobile location data or direct traffic tracking on your website. You're also missing out on the effects that the out-of-home channel is having on your other channels, which can be ridiculous. I mean, I was working with a supplements brand who was advertising, and they used programmatic digital bidding systems to advertise within gyms only. That was their only target. They had a very high CPM, but a low budget. So they only targeted gyms. And on Google search, we just did a simple kind of Google Trends check. They went from never being searched in the geos where they were advertising to having like 30 to 40% of search share across the US compared to the rest of their markets where they already had a presence. So they had this explosive search growth. And it was, I mean, it was like a $8,000 budget. Like, it was for out of home. That's, you know, a lot of media owners will kind of scoff at that, but it's incredible what it can do to your brand. And if you're not measuring the right signals, you're going to miss out. You're not going to notice.
Yeah. If they weren't really thinking about it, they would say, oh, wow, we really need to double down on branded paid search because look how good it's doing.
Yeah.
We're killing it.
They would stop their budget from the digital out of home, shift it all into branded search. And then eventually people would stop searching for them. They'd be like, what happened?
Why aren't people searching for us? Well,
exactly.
Yeah, that's the Brandon Page Zish fallacy, right? That's true of when we think about CTV and one of the folks that I this guy Safe, who I've learned a lot from about CTV. His whole perspective on it was TV is coming to us, and it really is the nature of that medium becoming more digital. And so I think maybe billboards are coming to us as well. And I say this as I am a digital marketing practitioner in my day to day. I've never bought a billboard. Maybe one day, but I'm also really bullish on the future of things like what are the ads in the back of taxis? Is that considered out of home?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm really bullish on the future of what I'm calling transient out of home, and that is the captive audience that exists in the back of vehicles, especially self-driving cars, and that being sort of one of the core future monetization vehicles of self-driving cars and what that means, because I think there's always interesting IDs and so forth that you can utilize in that scenario. But getting back to the crux of this, I think it's really interesting to see, Lyft and so, and I imagine there's all kinds of validation that you're doing there. Are you able to do things like incrementality testing in this space? How I'm just trying to think through the complexities of what that, like, how would you run an incrementality test here?
Yeah, we are absolutely jumping into incrementality testing. We're an out-of-home company kind of first, and then an ad tech company overall. So there's I'll be the first to say there's an inherent bias within our systems when it comes to channel level measurement. So if we're comparing to CTV, to direct mail, some other offline channels, to digital, of course, we're inherently going to have some sort of bias towards out-of-home. So it's better to offload that measurement to partners who can actually take a look at this with a 30,000 foot view. So AdQuick recently announced some partnerships with Keen, with Measured, who are leading the charge when it comes to incrementality testing. So absolutely, the challenge with incrementality testing is understanding A, what conversions can be attributed to out of home. That's a tricky one. And B, really the big one is, how do you do impressions right with out of home? They change all the time. If you use predictive models, you're not going to account for the macro factors, the political, the socioeconomic, the police chases. you can't predict that necessarily. Unless
you live in LA, in which case, if I say, there'll be a police chase tonight. And 80% chance I'm right.
It's Tuesday night.
exactly.
It's great. It's really hard to know what's going to happen in the real world. COVID taught us that time and time again. So what you really need to do is kind of have a strong way to measure just the activity in and around billboard units. And that's pretty straightforward. It comes down to mobile location data. Are you able to see how many devices were within a vicinity of a billboard while your creative was live? It's a really simple kind of solution to the formula, but the formula has a lot of inputs and it requires an extensive access to metadata on the ad or on the billboard space, the out-of-home space, an understanding of kind of what the view sheds are for particular units, how far away can you see those units? And then, of course, having access to certain mobile location indicators. So knowing where people are, whether or not they're shopping or turning on their mobile location data, it's all opt-in. So having access to that is kind of the first step to incrementality testing, which is basically taking a look at how the impressions made an impact on your overall bottom line and turning on and off channels that are associated with certain changes in your kind of bottom funnel metrics. A lot said there. maybe we can break it down. There's quite a lot to unpack there. It's all possible. And it's just plugging the right inputs in.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you've come up with some partnerships with Keen, and you mentioned Measured too, which I didn't see that that announcement, but I know we had Greg Dolan on the podcast way back in June of last year, episode 6, with Greg Dolan, the co-founder of Keen. And we just talked with Nick Stoltz of Measured a couple of episodes back.
Great guy.
We'll definitely link those in the show notes if you want people to go back and listen to those. But
it would have been good, by the way, if that was episode 17 that we'd had on, and it would have been 17
or 23.
I wonder. No, I don't think it was. Yeah. Done.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
We can make it though. We can rearrange it. But no, I mean, so I guess from
it's too much effort involved. Yeah, it's very good.
But from the AdQuick side, so you guys acting as like, you know, we have the data that can be used in a platform like Keen or like a platform like Measured. So you're partnering with them in a way to make that data transition seamless and easy for them.
Yeah. And I think I want to make a distinction between the kind of attribution approaches and then what Measured is doing, which is that pure incrementality mm-hmm. testing. Attribution requires user level data. The incrementality testing doesn't. And as we move Ooh. Towards, as you guys know probably better than anybody, as we move towards a privacy kind of first ecosystem and within this ad tech space where we're all trying to figure out what's next without cookies, incrementality testing is going to be essential. And you can do it without a home. You can turn it on and off like a light switch, especially with digital ads. I mean, it's you can do it within a couple of days if you have creatives approved with vendors. So it's like setting up incrementality tests is going to be your first step and a really good foray into figuring out, okay, where does out of home work? When does it work? And then hopefully you unlock the why, which attribution can help with. It can support that, but it's not required for incrementality tests.
Yeah. It would seem though, the sort of the, you know, as we talk about incrementality, the natural question and Jim is Mr. MMM, as I like to call him. And he's like, call me Jim. And I'm like, Mr. MMM, please. how is this, as more brands are adopting high velocity media mix models, is this something that, are you able to plug this data in? How is this interacting, especially with your traditional digital mediums where, I don't know, the data velocity and the flow is so high and the feature categorization that you're able to dive down into still coarse grained, but how are we thinking about it? Should we be thinking about this differently? And if so, are you working on MMMs right now in terms of essentially thinking about the effect of out of home?
Yeah, a lot of good questions there. I'll kind of address them in reverse order. When it comes to kind of building an internal MMM, it's not really AdQuick's place because we're not kind of the planning and executing side for other digital channels where a lot of brands are spending a lot of their money. So we're not building internal MMMs. We're providing inroads into MMM and incrementality testing partners who really their biggest next step with out of home is finding, is finding the right data to power those MMMs and any kind of form of mixed media modeling. Historically, I'll give a little industry insight here. Impression data, so really the number of eyeballs that are going to be exposed to your campaign and their frequency, it's a modeled figure. And for static, like think vinyl wrap units, it's planned in 4-week increments. So you get the same number for 4 weeks. And if you want to do,
I was going to say,
and you're probably one step ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if you're trying to incorporate that into a model, you ask whatever agency was in charge of booking that out of home, billboard or whatever it was, and asking for the data about the impressions. And they send you a PDF with location, monthly, you know, estimated impressions, that model number you're talking about. And then get to have an intern go through and do data entry into a spreadsheet. and then you have to figure out, well, my model is a weekly model and I have monthly numbers. Do I just spread them evenly or what? So, yeah, I mean,
what does the intern do? Let's think on behalf of the intern here.
Yes.
What do they do? Like they divide by four. That's the only thing you can do until you start to involve some other parameters, or you just find another metric. And for MMM, I'm not, you know, the primary kind of currency of the out of home space is impressions, just like any other kind of platform. So you book using impressions.
Alrighty, folks. If you're listening, I was listening live, but if you're listening to this, we are having a technical.
There's a lot of flexibility on the digital side and programmatic side.
Oh, Ty, I'm not sure if that recorded or if anyone heard you. Jim and I both had a moment of your screen froze. And we can probably cut this a little bit out, but if you want to go back to the start of that section, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. How far back? And I'm going to hide video here, so.
Yeah, what was
it? Can you hear me okay?
Yep. We can hear you.
Okay.
Yep. I'm trying to think how far back.
Okay.
So it was if you can rewind like a minute in your head, I'd say. I don't know what, what the word was. I was more tuned into, hey, this is
I had just finished talking about how I hated entering PDFs into, you know, and the interns.
Yeah.
Divide by four, and what are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
And go.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the interns supposed to do? yeah, exactly. All right, here we go with the interns. What are the interns supposed to do, right? Like, they've received a proof of performance from a Billboard media owner, and it says you got 20 million impressions for 4 weeks or whatever. The only thing that they can do is divide by four. So you have to start thinking as an MMM company doing weekly or daily level granularity, proving the performance and impact of a channel. You have to think about better ways to approach that incrementality testing framework. Because if you have the same number for every week of a campaign, for a 1 month campaign, that there's no information gain. Mm-hmm. And this is obvious to anyone who's worked on MMM. There's nothing that it doesn't even matter that it says 20 million, it could say a billion, but if there's no change, then you can't measure the impact of that change. It's just like a wave. Like how is the wave going to roll up on the beach if it's just a flat, you know, whatever, silly metaphor, but I think the point's getting across. So you need better data. And the way that you access this data is slightly nuanced, but really kind of depends on the reality of what's happening in and around your units, which comes back to focusing in on impression data at the daily granularity. And this can be predicted, but it can also be retroactively gathered via opt-in mobile location data, via kind of trends that are being measured by location companies. Like, there's various methods to access this higher quality data that's going to, or higher granularity data that's going to give you higher quality insights, especially out of an MMM, incrementality testing, et cetera.
Okay. I'm just trying to process the spongy bit here is just how accurate is that? If it's all modeled and I don't want to say made up and the points don't matter, a la Drew Carey, but it's one of those, how are you calibrating that? How do you have certainty in the volatility?
Well, you can always be certain of volatility.
Sure, that's, of course.
Kind of the police chase allegory. Indeed. And it's certainly factored in. I think what's interesting here is mobile location data is directly connected to the humans that control the devices that are moving in and around certain units. The hardest factors, and just putting these, being very transparent and sharing kind of the challenges with out-of-home measurement, is three-dimensional measurement is incredibly difficult. So if you are, let's say, putting up a billboard in Times Square, it's going to be pretty difficult to account for people passing, let's say, through the building that's underneath the billboard itself.
Right.
So there's no guarantee that they saw it. However, those people had to access that certain geo area, that geo-fenced area, somehow. We have two-dimensional measurement. We don't really have three-dimensional measurement. So as they approach the billboard, there's a likelihood that they saw it. And if 1,000 people kind of approached that billboard on a certain side, right, we include directionality, one day, on Monday, and then 10,000 people on Tuesday, and then 100,000 people on Wednesday, that change over time is going to be reflected in the behaviors of the individuals who are exposed to the ad. Now, Times Square is all digital, so we're also factoring in exactly when your ad was live, the timestamps, the 8 seconds that your ad was live. So that gets factored in to improve the accuracy as well. And then devices that are, you know, moving at 100 miles an hour are filtered out. There are certain kind of quality indicators that are factored in to improve the quality of that mobile location data. But all of this gets fed into a model. And then you study the response metrics that are associated with the time period that the ads were live. This is the other big caveat that is missed in out-of-home incrementality measurement. Not necessarily incrementality testing, but any incrementality measurement. Out-of-home has a slow time to conversion. There's no way necessarily around this. If you're a supplement company running ads in gyms, or if you're an attorney selling bail bonds to GTA drivers, it's going to be a lot shorter. But sure. In general, if you're decision a D2C of the brand, and you aren't looking at your phone while you're driving, or you aren't, sure. You know, kind of doing shopping while you're walking by an ad necessarily. So there's a longer time to conversion. So marketing analysts and modelers need to account for this window and extend their time to conversion in that period past the end of the campaign. So when your billboards are taken down, people are still thinking of your brand because you were on a billboard.
Sure.
Right? Like there is still that kind of extended ad recall and it needs to be factored in. So that's the other kind of caveat that's sometimes missed. It's like, oh, we took the ads down. It's over. You know, it's mm-hmm. all over. It's like, well, no, not really. You accessed a million people, a million different eyeballs, and you made this really strong impression. There's this memorable creative. It was a real life experience that they had. Give them a second to start shopping, you know, like sure. extend that yeah. time to conversion past your digital channels.
Yeah, that's the inherent challenge, though, with the digital channels. Even themselves when brands, they're running top of the funnel campaigns and we talk about the latency post impression efficacy as a key component of what brands need to be considering and really how long that shift is. And actually, one of the things I was interested in there is, are you doing surveys when you're talking about the associated lift? And I put this out there as an avid Google surveys user. I think I've made like $180 off of Google surveys over the years, where I have, it's amazing. It's Google Consumer Rewards. It's ridiculous, but I love it because what I'm looking at more than anything is the accuracy to which they believe I was either exposed to an ad or to which I was exposed to a specific geolocation, especially in, multi-tenancy, buildings like malls, and they always ask, did you go to Starbucks? And I'm like, get off my back, Google. Yes, I went to Starbucks. I'm in a 12 step for it, but still, it's one of those moments that I look at and go, oh, this is really interesting. Like, they thought I went to a tire store, but actually I was at the CVS beside it. That's really interesting. And I'm wondering if you have any kind of calibration like that as well.
Absolutely. Okay, brand lift surveys are a critical component of running billboard ads, and I'd say strip everything else away. Brand lift surveys are going to give you some of the best insight you can get onto creative performance and how resonant it was with a specific audience, really demographic audience. So sending out surveys to individuals who are within the vicinity of an ad campaign while it was live, there's multiple ways to source this data. And then once the surveys have been deployed, trying to understand whether or not they, A, remember seeing the ad, even though they were, or if they were nearby, and then separating them from the control group who was near the billboard, but does not remember seeing the ad. That's the control. Mm. They have very similar demographics and psychographics. The key distinction and that boundary there is going to be whether or not they remember seeing the ad. And this sets up a great way to actually assess incrementality from your campaign. Not just, 50% of people remember seeing my ad. Great. What does that do for me? It's the people who recall seeing the ad, which ones are likely to visit the website? Which ones are likely to share this brand with their friends? Those kinds of questions can be assessed. And then you say, all right, let's test this in two different cities with like match these markets and study whether or not the incrementality was different between two different creatives and see if that had an effect. What's driving performance here?
And the thing that I like about this is that, Simon, I know we've kind of fit the same mold. We got into marketing through the digital lane, right? Like we did not go through like traditional marketing courses in university. We kind of like got thrown in and like, oh, we're digital marketers. And so I feel like digital marketers have been spoiled with the amount of data that we've had. And now what I see happening, and not just in out of home, but Same thing with linear TV. Now we have CTV and radio. Well, now we have, you know, Spotify and like mm-hmm. these sort of traditional old school offline channels are starting to be integrated in a digital way that gives us a little bit more data so that we can start to think about doing things like incrementality testing with billboards, which, you know, if you thought about this 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, would be the realm of the, you know, the Coca-Colas of the world that have just
exactly.
gobs of money, gobs of billboards everywhere, and they can afford to do like a one city on, one city off kind of thing. Yep. But now this is becoming a little bit more, I hate to use this term, but democratized, right? It's more accessible, mm-hmm. I should say, to not necessarily the, you know, Fortune 100 brands out there. Mic yeah. drop.
huge. Say it again. Yeah. It's
I do think we have a slight delay on the audio. I don't know if that is maybe we'll fix it in post. Maybe folks will hear it and they'll go, why are they all talking over each other? And that is the magic of podcasts, folks.
Yes, it is.
Indeed. Sorry, Ty, as you were saying.
No worries. I think it's super interesting. Maybe democratized isn't the right word, but it doesn't. It's definitely along the right track, where you have access to this ecosystem of tools that makes it really easy for you to start playing in this ad space. It's not terrifying. It's not ridiculously expensive, especially when you consider the CPMs that you're getting. They're incredibly competitive. Mm. There is value to scaling up your campaigns, but you can run an experiment and do a test and then come back with results that are really, really easy to scale. I mean, you can quickly match all of the same kind of features of a certain billboard, creative, size, audience that you're reaching, market that you have a presence in, and you can duplicate those kind of success metrics across multiple GS.
Yeah, and this is a thing. I know when we were talking earlier about it's not just being able to measure, but it's also being able to target, right? Which I don't know what the capabilities used to be 20 years ago with billboards, but mm-hmm. I imagine you probably couldn't target in a way that you can now, right? When you're acting more like a DSP, where you're saying, I want to reach this audience with, you know, this monthly income and this whatever, you know, other demographics and things like that, right? Like that feels like something that historically probably wasn't possible, but now we're starting to kind of get to that point as well.
Yeah, there's kind of two sides to this. The first is targeting is available. It's making sure that your placements are in a vicinity of somebody that you want to reach. So you can leverage audiences to take care of that. You can do first party or third party audience targeting, which is incredibly powerful. The other side is with out of home, you're reaching one to many. So inherently you're going to reach audiences that aren't necessarily who your intended audience is. This normally to marketers is like, well, I know exactly who I want to reach. But when you're experimenting with a channel, the only way to actually understand whether or not you're achieving incrementality and whether or not your target audience is responding as expected is to actually have some sort of a control established. There's a lot of discovery that occurs with out of home. We're working with a major e-commerce brand right now who's exploring audiences and trying to figure out, okay, we know our audience pretty well, but we're expanding into some new kind of business units. We're offering some services that you may not associate with this brand immediately. So we actually are in a discovery phase where we have a good idea of who would benefit from these products, but we want to learn more. And you can do that with out of home, where you run an experiment at enough scale to reach a large enough audience to where you can study the response from the individuals who are associated with certain audiences and behaving in a certain way, maybe through their accessing your signup forms or site visits or kind of other simple metrics. You can also study your revenue metrics down the line and see, okay, are they responding with their wallet? Are they driving new revenue? So there's a lot to unpack, and it starts by kind of going broad, going a little bit broader and looking for some of the insights you can gain from reaching audiences that you didn't expect.
Yeah. I know I could keep talking about billboards, especially 23-meter tall billboards all day, but we are sadly reaching the end of our hour here. And Ty, one thing we like to end the podcast with is a takeaway, something that marketers and analysts listening can do immediately after listening to the show. It might be a recommendation for them for a specific book or article or another podcast or newsletter or a tool or something that they can take action on right away. Is there something that you have that you would be able to share with our dear listeners?
Yeah. Man, we covered so much ground today. Thanks for the great and insightful questions and thoughts. I think one exciting thing that you can experiment with is involve your creative team and go generate a billboard. Maybe, Simon, you can provide the tools that you used to do this, but go use some generative AI and experiment with what your billboard would look like over Piccadilly Square and Times Square on the Sphere. Play around with it, explore what your brand can look like when it's out in the real world. And then the other thing I encourage marketers to do is continue to look at some of the audiences that they're targeting on the digital side and check out if they're available and out of home. You can do this with AdQuick, but you can kind of parallel your targeting efforts on AdQuick as well. So I would encourage that kind of exploration. There are kind of endless bounds of out of home. There's a lot of exciting sides to this. There's some really interesting hacks you can do to access your target audience. I talked about the supplement brand accessing their gym going audience. There's units within gyms. There's all sorts of fun stuff that you can play around with. So go experiment. It's fun.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well,
hold on. I want to tag on to the incremental insight and add additional Please. Incrementality here. AdQuick has a bunch of really cool calculators on their site. There's a billboard cost calculator and an out-of-home planner that are just free tools to use, really fun to play with. You can see on the map like where the units are and things like that. And if you're listening to this podcast and you've made it all the way to this point, chances are you probably like podcasts or you just really like Simon and my voice.
Or you've fallen asleep. Yes.
That's often possible.
I think, indeed. Dreaming about billboards. That's what's going on.
Yes. Ooh, that would be a weird thing. But if you do like really cool marketing data related podcast, AdQuick has a podcast, the AdQuick Madvertising podcast. I'm a big fan of it. I like to listen to it. Has some really good stuff. It is not, it's not like a advertisement for AdQuick. It's actually just a really good podcast. So definitely go check that out. We'll have links in the show notes. Simon, were you gonna say something?
I was gonna jump in with the classic concluding moment. I think when you're working in a marketing organization, you can often feel like we've really tapped out of all of these digital measurable channels, and you'll be sitting there and you'll have all these 23 bubbles and more, if even so many options, and someone will come in the room and say, what if we try it out of home? I think it's measurable. I think there's a way that we can approach this. And you can say, yeah, I'll take on that challenge because I think it's time to measure up.
That's a wrap. Many thanks to the talented Josh Silverbauer and Jason Packer for providing the theme song for the pod. And if you've stuck around this long, let us know what you think. Leave us a rating and review wherever you listen. And keep the conversation going with us on the Measure Up page on LinkedIn, on our website, measureup.show, or on Twitter @MeasureUpPod.